everybody. It's a couple of dusty muffins. I'm Julie Blacklow, and we have an amazing guest today.
Certainly do. And I'm Penny Legay. We're going to speak today with Dr. Jim Weber. He lives in Seattle here, same as us. I've known Jim for a long, long time. Now, Jim is Dr. Jim Weber. Jim is a general surgeon. He's a doctor. He is also now a yoga instructor. You say.
A Couple of Dusty Muffins is brought to you by the Sabe Corporation, with a decades-long history of promoting medical and life sciences.
You say, okay, that's not so unusual. What's unusual, though, is that Jim completely left his medical practice behind to devote his life full-time to yoga. And Jim, we are always so fascinated. First of all, welcome. But we are so fascinated by people who make these incredibly dramatic midlife changes. So welcome, Dr. Jim Weber. Good to see you.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
What a switch from taking out spleens and body parts and going to yoga.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I spend a lot more time taking things out than I ever did putting things in. But once in a while, I got to put things in, like a pacemaker
or,
a portal for chemotherapy and stuff. I was always much more happy putting things in than taking things out.
Yeah. Amen, brother.
Spoken like a true man.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, was there a single point, or was it a gradual change, Jim, that you say, I'm done in the operating room and I'm going to change my life dramatically?
You know, I think it was, a process. Both of my parents were docs, and I always thought I'd probably be a doctor, and I kind of let things slide, but I was pre-med in college. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just kind of shuffle along and go to medical school, and I'll find a field in medicine that'll appeal to me. And I did. And it looked like the surgical field was the right one for me, because I kind of like to accomplish things and not just diagnose things.
Right.
So I went off in that direction, and I ended up leaving New York and out here for residency training. And in the residency, I ended up being fortunate enough to do the first gastric bypasses at the university in a public health hospital. And I really enjoyed working with those people because nobody seemed to care about them.
Right.
The medical establishment's lack of willpower, it's their own damn fault, stuff like that. To me, it may be related to the fact that my mother was an alcoholic and she had problems and these people had problems. And I thought, you know, I couldn't do much for mom's drinking, but maybe I can do something to help these people. So I got involved with that as a general surgeon. That was my specialty, weight loss surgery. And I was there in the early years when there were only about 250 of us in the country. And, the field kind of took off. I started doing review courses over the weekend and hanging up a shingle and deciding they could do it. Anyway, so my career as a weight loss surgeon took off because every overweight person has 10 overweight friends, you know. And even though the medical establishment looked at me as sort of doing fringe work, I was very happy with what I was doing.
You were seeing these people as human beings, not as, you know, just entities that were out of control.
I thought of them as thin people trapped in a fat frame.
Trying
to get out.
Yeah.
That's the way I looked at them.
So what type of surgery were you doing, Jim?
First, I was doing simple gastric staplings where you made the pouch smaller, the stomach smaller. And then I got into gastric bypass. Never did lap bands, never believed in it, didn't think it was a good enough operation. And as it turns out, people aren't doing it much anymore anyway. So, I never thought that I should take credit for taking weight off anybody. I just was giving them a tool, letting them learn to feel full, letting them, for the first time in their life, realize what satiety was all about. And that was great. And I was happy to do it. But it was very labor intensive because all these people had all these comorbidities, hypertension, diabetes, you know, sleep apnea, arthritis, depression, all kinds of stuff. So I was dealing with a whole lot of stuff, and it wasn't just going in there and fixing the operation, or making a stomach pouch smaller, et cetera.
But there was also stuff personally going on with you.
Absolutely.
I've read your book, and wow, you know,
absolutely.
I mean, you've had an amazing, interesting, complicated life.
So while all this is going on, I am trying to get these patients to exercise more and to eat more healthy and to read food labels and stuff. And the next thing I know, I get back with the love of my life, who I had not seen for almost 30 years, over weight loss surgery. She found out that she asked, you know, her research assistant who was doing this type of work, because she was coming out with another etiquette book. She's an etiquette author and wanted to put it in a chapter about obesity etiquette. and wanted to talk to some surgeons who did the surgery, because when she reached out to obese people, they didn't really particularly want to talk to her. Mm. And my name popped up. She didn't know I was even doing this. We hadn't been in touch for a long time. As things worked out, not only did we get in touch, but we eventually got married. We finally did right what we should have done right, you know, 52 years ago.
Wow.
Which is part of the book.
You met back in college. Yeah.
So Mary, that's it. We met in college. So Mary comes out and looks at me and she says, you know, you're getting round-shouldered. And I said, well, what do you expect? I'm leaning over an operating table all day long. She said, have you ever done yoga? And I never even thought about yoga. Never even thought about it. And she had been doing it for years. So she got me doing yoga. And it wasn't that much of a stretch to go from telling my patients they should exercise more to me doing more exercise. Mm-hmm. Not just going out there and running and bicycling and stuff, but actually doing things that were good for the spirit as well as the body. So I started doing yoga. And one thing led to another. And by that point in time, I was a little burned out, frankly, in medicine and surgery, especially weight loss surgery, especially because I've been doing it for nearly 30 years. And, you know, I kind of was thinking, maybe it's time to move on before it's too late.
So you're a highly skilled surgeon, like our guest today, Dr. Jim Weber, and then you become a yoga instructor. That's what we're talking about, midlife switches. Clearly, one of the things that people ponder when they hear your story is, how do you go from the income of a general surgeon to a yoga instructor? What was that like? I mean, did you have a bunch of money socked away to live on? Or
in his book, Jim points out that he was getting a lot of lawsuits as a doctor, malpractice crap that he had to deal with. And that eats into your finances. You know, a lot of my friends, doctor friends, have quit because they can't afford the malpractice insurance. So there were financial issues also going on for you. He wasn't, if I judge by the book, you were not wealthy as a surgeon.
Right. Well, that's an interesting question. I was fortunate enough to have physicians as parents, a private school education. So I guess you would call it a privileged background. And I never really worried about the next dollar coming in. I would, for instance, do what my parents did. If a doctor or a doctor's family had a medical problem, I'd never charge them. I would never charge a nurse. I wouldn't even charge a nurse's family. I mean, I'd take what insurance paid, and that's about it. So, you know, my income was okay because I was busy, but gradually my write-offs went up and my malpractice went up, as Julie said, you know, and it wasn't like I was barraged with lawsuits, but I took the hit for one, and that raised my malpractice rates from, I don't remember what it was, like $12,000 a year to $75,000, and that's huge.
Wow.
And, you know, and the write-offs were getting more significant, and pretty soon I was getting about 17 cents on my dollar charge. And so, you know, I didn't worry about it because, as Penny asked, I did have a decent pension salted away, and I don't live lavishly. I don't worry about those things. And, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff. We've been to a lot of places, and we are perfectly happy to live on our quiet little floating home, and we don't worry about a lot of stuff. We don't spend a lot of money. So for me, the finances, as I was winding down my practice, then going into yoga and getting paid very little as a yoga teacher, I didn't worry about that. It's a privilege to do gastric bypass, and it's a privilege to do yoga. And that's the way.
Yeah. So it was more an emotional change for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Jim, you start taking yoga with your wife. That kind of developed into your love of the practice. I want to know, now that you're a full-time yoga instructor, has it lived up to your expectations of what you wanted from this switch? And what is it that you get from being a yoga instructor that you did not get as a surgeon?
Oh, I love that. For one thing, I don't have to take it home with me every night, right?
Yeah.
The patient problems, you know, I mean, people would be calling me in the middle of the night. And I felt like I was always responsible and pretty much always on call for my patients, because it was such a specialized area that I was in. Most of the other general surgeons either didn't have enough interest in what I was doing or really didn't know how to deal with those complications because they didn't have to face them. So I pretty much kept on call all the time. And so I was living with my practice every day, you know, day and night. In yoga, I see more people and I meet more interesting people, and I don't just see them in a clinical setting. We become friends, and I've met more interesting people. So to answer your question,
like me,
well, like you, slightly strange.
I had to say it because I didn't hear it coming from you.
Well, I was getting to it. One time, Penny and I went to a bar and we were watching a football game, and you'd think she was out in the middle of the sidelines of the field being her cheerleader thing. She's just hooting and hollering. And
that's our Penny. Yeah. She's everybody's cheerleader.
Oh, man. So I meet people like Penny, and I meet, you know, ballerinas, and I meet the mayor's wife. She's become a good friend of mine. I meet retired judges, a guy was city attorney for 3 terms, all these people, interesting people, doctors on a more of a social basis. And I also trained in Ayurveda. Mm. So I learned Indian natural medicine. And some of these people would come, and I would do privates and do specialized sequences for people with specific problems. And all that was a lot of fun. So I'm just loving this, Penny. I get home and I got stories to tell. And I don't just teach a yoga class. One of my students called it Yoga Plus, because we talk about classical music and what shows are fun on TV. And we get into politics, which we probably shouldn't do.
No, that's not going to help. No, not these days.
Whatever.
Well, Jim, I have a lot of friends who, you know, are committed to yoga. And my partner's daughter is a yoga instructor herself. And my son used to do it, too. What is it at the core of it? Why is it so good for us?
Okay. It does things that other disciplines do, like stretching. You can get that in Pilates. And strengthening, somewhat. You get more of that in Pilates. You can do calisthenics. You can work with a personal trainer and get a lot of those things. But it's the mind, body, and spirit connection of yoga that's rather unique. I mean, there is a way when you do the practice and you learn to have the practice come more from your heart than your head, and less from the teacher than from your own sense of how things kind of flow and evolve, that leads you to perceiving this deep connection with the spirit, a real peaceful connection, a real sense that you're in the right place when you're doing it and you're doing the right thing and everything is cool and calm. And, you know, it's just, it sets you up for the rest of the day.
Wow.
It's great for energy building, but it's also great for calming.
Yeah, it's interesting. It does both.
Injury prevention. It's also good for rehabilitation from surgery. It can also cause injury. So you have to be a little careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great thing. I use my medical background a lot. I mean, I talk to people about physiology, and I do adjustments. I love doing adjustments.
Ooh, chiropractic.
Kind of, without a chiropractic license.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, no. So what's the biggest gift it's given to you, besides a new kind of vocation, a new commitment, a new way to practice? What is the core thing it's given to you? How has it changed you?
I'm more grateful than I ever was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more introspective than I was. I mean, I take time for those types of things. I feel like I can influence people to be more inclusive in their lives. Seattle's First Lady is one of my students, and she is always talking about how inclusive I am. I never thought of myself as inclusive, but I guess I am. I mean, we bring everything into this. We accept everything. We are grateful. We reach out. We start every class with a little quiet breathing and meditation session, and then we center and ground, and I give them some sort of mini yogic sermon that I don't think about in advance. In fact, I don't even know what I'm saying. It comes from the heart. So that typically Mary will say after class, gee, that was kind of cool what you said today. And I'll look at her and I'll say, what did I say? Because I really...
Oh, give us an example of what you might do at the beginning of a session.
Okay. The first thing we'll do is we will cross our legs, we'll sit tall, we'll quiet the mind, we'll get into breathing that's a little more slower, a little more pacifying. And then I'll have them, once they're locked in the present moment, I'll have them center. And centering is an exercise where you just kind of deepen your consciousness and you kind of celebrate yourself. You do a process of self-recognition, which ultimately becomes self-realization. You begin to understand a little better where you're coming from, who you are, and what you have to bring to the table of life. And then after that, we come out of that, we bring our hands together, we bring our thumbs to our chest, and we practice gratitude. That's when all this stuff comes out from my heart. We really talk about gratitude and generosity every class. So really in yoga, every day is Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And every day should be filled with the holiday spirit. And one reaches out not just to another person, but to a dog, a cat, a bird, a blade of grass, a tree, you know.
Yes.
You know, and the idea is to be available and to take it all in and to do what we can without asking for anything in return.
You know, Jim, as somebody who's been taking your classes for a long, long time, I think that's the favorite part of the whole practice is the beginning when you bring us all in to ourselves, but not in a selfish way. It's more like finding the light within and thanking ourselves for taking the time to show up for ourselves. I really love that concept of saying, okay, I'm taking this hour and a half or whatever to take care of myself. And it is a total mind-body experience. I've been practicing yoga since the 80s and I am absolutely addicted. I love it. You are a great instructor. You are fun. I must say, too, that you usually get a sports report from Jim at the beginning of many of our classes because he talks about the Mariners this and the Seahawks that and Kraken. I mean, you can count on that if some sports stuff's happening in town, too.
I don't know about the Mariners, man. That'll make you tense up.
Sure does. Yeah.
But, you know, reading your book, you've had just an incredibly crazy, busy, maybe overly full life. Do you look back on it now and wonder, how the hell did I get here? You know, or how did I survive all that? I had that experience in writing my own memoir and looking back and thinking, oh my God, I can't believe I'm still here.
I've seen a fair amount and I've done a fair amount and I'm grateful for all that. And I like to write about it. Something would occur to me in class and then I'd sit and write a story about it. And then the story I would use as a gift to somebody. I'd send it out. Here, I just wrote about going across the Peace Arch inadvertently, walking through Peace Arch Park and nearly getting arrested, you know, when we were just walking our dog, not paying any attention, that kind of stuff. And Mary would say, what are you doing? I say, well, I'm just writing. So I look back, things occur to me, and I put them down in writing. Mm. When I was a surgeon practicing, I would keep one-line reminders of stuff that happened. I never knew what I was going to do with that, but I had about 5 or 6 pages full of one-line reminders of little anecdotes and things, some of which I put into my book and some, you know, they're just there. Just recall. I'm just happy to think back and move on.
What do you know to be true between your medical life and your yoga life, your spiritual life, your
personal life,
helping people life? Yeah, everything. What do you know?
Your own health.
What did you say, Penny?
He's had his own health issues with...
Oh, God, who hasn't by the time... Yes, you've had 4 heart attacks.
True.
How are you still here?
35 years later, I'm still kicking.
Yeah, so you're younger than I am. I'm the old broad, as usual. So what do you know is true?
Gratitude, being available, being ready to give of yourself, selfless dedication to helping others just because... Don't need a reason, being prepared for the unexpected because you can deal with stuff because you never know what's going to happen.
No, you don't. No? And at our age, Jim, Penny's a youngster compared to us. You know, we've got less time ahead for sure. And you just never know.
Our topic today is midlife career switches. And boy, Dr. Jim Weber, our guest today, certainly has a dramatic story.
Do you think about dying and death? I mean, it's a world you lived in for 40 years, illness and all that. What do you think about that? And does your practice of yoga help you in these later years?
You know, I have to deal with the fact that I have coronary artery disease. I also have an aneurysm in my ascending aorta, which we're following. It's a mild to moderate size right now. But my dad had that too. So yeah, I need to deal with those issues. Dad once told me, Jimmy, he said, no males in our family live past about age 72.
Wow.
Well, he made it to 84 and I'm 75. So I don't know. I mean, that was then and this is now. I'd like to think that I'm prepared for what eventually will come. Mary and I go over things. She's better prepared, I think, than I am. She's taken courses in Anamkara. It's the Celtic tradition of the sacred art of dying.
Wow. Okay.
And, you know, she's good. She's on top of that. And I'm absorbing some of that. You know, and I've dealt with so many deaths and sicknesses in patients. And I've had to deal with some of that in myself. I guess, you know, are we ever really ready? I don't know.
Penny and I have done a number of podcasts dealing with the subject, which is fascinating to me. We've done a death doulas. We've talked about that. We've talked about Recompose, the world's first human composting organization in West Seattle. Now it's, you know, growing all over the world. We've also talked about near-death experiences. Mm. That's one of our really, you know, popular podcasts.
Yeah.
So the medicine yoga thing, it makes sense to me. Do you miss anything about being a practicing physician?
Yeah, I do miss some of it. I did a Myers-Briggs test years after being a surgeon. And my makeup is such that I would have been probably a better family doc. Originally, I wanted to be a pediatric surgeon. My dad was a pediatrician. But as things happened, I ended up as a general surgeon. And it really, there's nothing in my Myers-Briggs that redounds of general surgeon's approach to life. I mean, and so here I was kind of like a fish out of water, and I knew it, but I was in my own little niche. And so it was okay. It was okay. Do I miss being out of that? I did more than my share. I felt like I did what I could, and I'm still in touch with a lot of my patients. They know to call me anytime if they have questions. So I keep my hat in. I still have an appointment at the University of Washington. I'm still on the faculty, the clinical faculty. I go over once a year and I teach a 4 or 5 hour class to the geriatric nurse practitioners on how to sew up little lacerations.
Wow.
So yeah. Wow. Yeah. But the
You're
hands are getting a little more shaky than they used to be. So when I'm showing them how to put the needle in and take it out the other side, I'm not quite as steady as I was, but I think I'm still okay.
I'll stick with you with yoga then. Yeah.
Jim, it's been wonderful to have this conversation with you. And I want to remind people, you mentioned the book several times, Julie. It's called Cutting Out by James Weber. And the subtitle, The Making and Unmaking of a Surgeon. And it's available, what, through Amazon, Jim?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble. And yes.
Yeah, it's all on the page.
Yeah.
He doesn't really, I'm sure there's stuff he held back.
But you think?
You have to go to yoga classes to do that.
Because the stuff you told me, the stuff you reveal in the book is very honest and very open.
And you give us all hope that huge midlife changes can be accomplished with grace, joy, and gratitude.
I got a lot of help from my wife.
All right, honey. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim. Love you.
I love you too, Penny. Thank you.
Well, from medicine to yoga. Perfect life change, I think, and amazing.
Right, and really shows us that big changes are possible in midlife. Thank you, Dr. Jim Weber.
A couple of dusty muffins, thanks to Sabe Corporation, a company dedicated to the idea that a rising tide lifts all boats, and we agree.
Let's assume that you love the Dusty Muffins. Well, why don't you tell a friend? Just pass it on. Besides, it'd be kind of fun to watch their face as you say, hey, have you listened to a couple of Dusty Muffins? Thanks for listening. I'm Production Director Clem Daniels.